Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski. Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Today, we bring you a powerful message from Trent Dilfer at our national conference in 2018. You can still register to attend this special event, which is February 22nd through the 24th in Orlando, Florida. This is so much more than a typical clinic. Yes, you will get the X's and O's from some of the best in the country at every level. You'll also hear incredible stories of program turnarounds, careers being built, and the power of football, and much, much more. And it's a huge opportunity to connect with coaches around the country and talk about the issues and brainstorm solutions, whether those are on or off the field. Register at usafootball.com, NC19 podcast, and enter the code podcast99 to save on your registration. Trent Dilfer's keynote is built around the words, "Coach says," and the power we have as coaches to shape young people's lives. Trent's message is an important reminder about the effect we have in the way we approach our profession. Listen in. I know you will enjoy. Here's Trent Dilfer at the 2018 USA Football National Conference.
First of all, thank you for being here. I get excited anytime I'm around coaches. I think that I'm a product of coaching. My dad was a coach. I grew up on the back of a blocking sled when I was a little tyke. But I think it's really important, and where I value you guys maybe as much as anybody is I think you're the most important influencers in our country today. I think a coach has more influence on the direction of our country than any politician, more than even school teachers. I think they impact kids to go change the world. And that's mainly what I'm going to be talking about today. I recently moved to Austin, Texas. I'd been a California kid. I'd retired as a 49er in 07. My family and I stayed in the Bay Area. And for the last 10 years, we've been in the Bay Area. And we went to Austin, Texas. And for the first time in my life, my wife said, "Let's build a man cave. And let's put all your memorabilia up." Now, 14 years is a long time to play in the NFL. And then you take your college career, your high school stuff. So you can imagine the amount of crap that had been in storage units for so long. Well, one of the things was she wanted to do all my jerseys up on the wall. Now, when you're a journeyman quarterback and teams keep cutting you, you accumulate a lot of jerseys. So, and it was expensive getting these suckers framed. But, so for the first time, I had this man cave, and I got the 5 TVs so I can watch. I watch more Saturday football than I do Sunday football. But I got to watch all the games. I got the Super Bowl trophy, and I have my favorite pictures and all the awards I've won and all that stuff. And then this one wall has all my jerseys. As I was going through the jerseys, it was really a weird experience because each jersey all of a sudden triggered a bunch of memories. You got to understand something about me. I am not a guy that lives or identifies with my past and my career. So I never lay in bed and think about, ooh, when I played so-and-so in 2000, or the games don't roll like a mental Rolodex. It was a great period of my life, something I value tremendously. What came out of it was spectacular, but it's not what I think about all the time. But putting the jerseys up forced me to think about some things. Because like anything, I put my high school jersey up. And, you know, this is a lot of hair ago. This is 1988 when I had a mullet. And I still have my mom stitched up one of the shoulders with pink thread on this gray jersey. And I'm putting this jersey up. And it was amazing the memories that came back. Here's the biggest memory that came back. 1988, we're playing our rival. I grew up in a coastal community in Northern California. And we're playing our rival. Our high school had never beat this high school. And my stepdad was the high school coach at my high school for years before I went there. And this was our nemesis. Not only did they beat us, they would typically crush us. Well, my junior year, we're down 21-0 at halftime. We come back in the second half. I throw three touchdowns. It's 21-20. The head coach puts me off to the sideline, and I still have this picture of us both kneeling down, and he says, "Trent, you got us here. You decide. Kick the extra point or go for two to win." Well, what's a 17-year-old knucklehead going to say? We're going for two, right? So we're going to go for two and beat this high school for the first time ever. And we call, before John Gruden started calling it Spire 2Y Banana, it was just called Fire Pass. And we call Fire Pass. Our best player is going to get the ball in the flat. Titans are going to hard inside release, get the Sam to hold with them. We're going to take the Z. We're going to pick inside. Fullback's going to be wide open in the flat. Sure enough, I come up off the fake. Best player wide open. Skip him the ball. Totally choke. I mean, as big a choke job as I've ever done in my life. But that's the memory that came back when I'm putting up my high school jersey. So then we're putting up my college jersey. I went to Fresno State, again, a lot of hair ago. And I'm putting up the college jersey. And the first memory that hits me is 1991. I'm a redshirt freshman. I'm the backup quarterback. And we're playing at New Mexico State, about week six, I think it is. And great starting quarterback ahead of me. His name was Mark Barsotti, wonderful player. Breaks his leg halfway through the game. And they throw me in there. I couldn't call a play. I was so nervous. I was shaking in the huddle. I would take, like, it was supposed to be a five-step drop. I'd take three steps and just get the heck out of Dodge and start running. Didn't read a defense the whole game. I mean, it was a train wreck first experience for a quarterback. I was completely unprepared. I hadn't prepared as the starter. I had kind of gotten lazy. I was more concerned with, you know, the college life than I was football. But why was this the memory that was coming back? I'm choking in high school. I'm unprepared in college. What's the next memory that's going to flood my mind? So I think about playing BYU in 1992. Oh, I know why, because I have two college jerseys. I have my college jersey, then I have my retired college jersey. My jersey got retired at Fresno, so I have my college retired jersey. And it makes me think about 1992 against BYU. BYU was really good back then. This is right after Ty Detmer. They're powerhouse. We're new to the conference. We go to Provo to play them. And we ran a bunch of deep in routes back then. The old 428, you know, constantly running weak side and strong side digs by our perimeter receivers. And study the film, was more prepared this time, go in, and all of a sudden, the first two digs I throw over the game, the safeties pick. Just hits them right in the chest. And I'm going, what the heck's going on? It's the first time I'd ever seen quarters coverage. They had never shown quarters coverage on film. And we go to Provo, and because of all the outside crossing routes we ran, the deep digs, they line up in quarters, and those safeties, without an inside clear, they're just jumping number one on both sides, and it's hitting them in the chest. And it was the most frustrating game I'd ever played in college, because I think it's cover two. You know, when you're a sophomore in college, you've never seen quarters, you think it's a split safety look. Man, this is cover two. You should come right underneath the safety. Instead, these safeties are jumping these digs. So again, why in the heck, I tell my wife as we're putting on the jersey, why in the heck am I thinking about choking in high school, being unprepared my freshman year in college, and then throwing four picks against BYU my sophomore year? Then we start getting my NFL jerseys. And I think about year 2000, I'm in Baltimore, and we're putting up the Super Bowl jersey, and this is probably the greatest memory of my college career. It starts as a horrible memory. We're playing Tennessee. They're the best team in the AFC at the time. And we're in their place, and we play a great football game. All three phases, really playing well. We get the ball. We're really running out the clock. We're kind of in a situation to go down and kick a field goal to win. And we're kind of on that fringe area. I think we're like the 28-yard line, where we still want to get another first down to make the kick easier. And there's enough time. There's like 2:30 that you might also want to go in and score, too. And we run the double slants to the weak side. We call double slants to the weak side with a strong side stick. And I get to the line of scrimmage, and Brandon Stokely's my inside receiver, and the nickel player lines up way inside of Brandon. So what are you going to do if you're predetermining the coverage? You think you're throwing the outside slant, right? Inside slant's going to eat up the nickel. Outside guy's going to jump inside the corner. 8-yard completion, move the chains, off we go. And I drop back, and I look right at the nickel player, and he bluffs me. He starts inside, and he jumps outside, and I throw it right to him. And he runs it back for a touchdown. So we've gone from going to win the game to all of a sudden I have pissed the game away. I've single-handedly lost it. So again, why when I'm putting up these jerseys am I thinking about all this bad stuff? Because in the same time frames I'm putting up the jerseys, here's what else I'm thinking about. That the next year, 1989, when I was in high school, we went to their place, North Monterey County, and we ripped them a new one. And we beat them for the first time in my school's history. And I threw a game-winning touchdown. And in 1991, just 5 weeks after I was unprepared and was a total train wreck as the quarterback, after our quarterback got hurt, we won the conference championship. We beat Jeff Garcia in the conference championship game, and I ran two touchdowns and threw two touchdowns and played almost flawlessly. And I learned how to prepare. And then 93, we went back to Provo, Utah to play him again the year after I'd thrown four interceptions, and I threw for 450 and four touchdowns and gashed him. And the next series after I had thrown the interception to lose the game, I took our team 80 yards and threw a game-winning touchdown pass with 15 seconds left on the clock. I tell the story because as I was growing up in football, I had incredible coaches. And never once can I remember when I had something bad happen to me that a coach ever told me it was a failure. The language that was used in my career was, it was a temporary setback. That with every bad thing that happens to you as a football player, it's how you process it. And I processed it as a temporary setback. Recently, I was challenged by a mentor in my life to define moments of my life in one word. Have you guys ever gone through this exercise? It's a big thing around the new year. A lot of leaders will tell you to define your new year in one word. Well, this mentor told me to go back through the course of my life and to define periods of my life in one word. So I started doing this exercise for my football life. I was like, golly, this is tough. I was the third team all-league quarterback my senior year in high school. The first team guy is a guy named Brian Murphy. He was 5'9". Now, I looked like this in high school, believe it or not. Didn't have this. The rest was pretty much the same. Had a little more of this. But I was 6'4", 235, ran 4'6", could throw a football 80 yards in the air. I could do it all. And I was a third team high school quarterback. I went on. It's a pretty fun recruiting story. I was being recruited by nobody as a quarterback. Everybody was recruiting me as a tight end, outside backer type player. And Fresno came in to watch the quarterback they're recruiting, ironically from this North Monterey County school, to watch him play basketball against us. And they had offered him. And they were just going, senior year, you know, follow-up visit. Hey, I think he had his official coming up in a couple weeks. And I went for 44 and dunked five times on him. And the coach came down on the court after the game and said, here's why I was here. His name's Rich Olson. Many of you have probably run across him at some point. Rich Olson comes down and he says, listen, son, we came here to talk to Todd. I haven't talked to our head coach, but you coming to campus this week, we got a full ride for you at Fresno State to play quarterback. So I went from third team all league to playing in a basketball game to get a scholarship at Fresno. I went from the fourth team red shirt quarterback knucklehead to having my name on the stadium. Heisman Trophy candidate, All-American, Player of the Year. Started as a four-string red shirt knucklehead that was crying in the parking lot after that train wreck game in 91. I was a sixth pick of the NFL draft to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. From there became the worst player in the National Football League. And I'm not kidding. I was the worst player in the NFL for like 2.5, 3 years. Not one. Historically bad. as a player to a Pro Bowl a year later. I went from a discarded quarterback in Tampa, where they literally ran me out of town after 6 years, was being booed at the Outback Steakhouse when they said, Dilfer, table for two. The entire restaurant stands up and boos me and my wife out of an Outback. To that same year, coming back to Tampa as a Baltimore Raven and hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. You can tell I have a face for radio, and yet I did 9 years of Monday Night Football, pre and post game. So I started going through this, and I'm like, what does this mean? How do I put this in one word? Dysfunctional? I don't know what this word is. And I came up with grit. Grit is passion and perseverance to a long-term goal. It's a very trendy word right now. Very few know what it really is. But I wasn't born with grit. I wasn't born with the ability to not look at setbacks, not look at mistakes as failures, instead looking at setbacks. So how, through my story of football, why was I able to develop such great grit and take bad and turn it into good? Why didn't failure ever define me, or setbacks ever define me in my career? Because I had coaches. I had coaches that nurtured this into me. I had coaches that, whether they knew it or not, were very careful with the words they used to speak to me. I had coaches because I was looking to the coach to say, what now, coach? Who am I? What do I do? This hurts. Where do I move forward from this? And they had the wisdom to nurture a self-speak in me that allowed me to view mistakes as temporary setbacks instead of failures, to develop a deep-rooted grit inside of me. I think in football today, there's a couple lies. I'm going to end my talk before I do Q&A with the two biggest lies in football, but I think this would be in there too. Football has been put into the nature bucket. You're good if by natural selection you are supposed to be good. That's bullshit. Football is about nurturing. If you are in a seat today and you're coaching, you're by definition a nurturer. Nurture greater than nature. See, a coach has this incredibly powerful ability to shape a kid's vision of him or herself. Power, burden, opportunity, I don't care what you call it. But the words you say and how you treat your kids is going to paint a vision for what they are. It's going to determine their self-speak. Billy Graham's one of the greatest humans that's ever been on this planet. And he's famous for saying this: the two most powerful words in our culture today are coach says. Meaning, whatever coach says trumps all the other inputs in his life. Now let's dig into that for a second, because I have three kids. And I've been told, well, no, it's the media. It's parents, it's social media, it's teachers. Not according to one of the wisest men ever. And my perspective, I've seen the landscape, I would agree with him. That what coach says means has way more weight than what Sally Jane or Johnny White Sox says. And I know it means more than what parents say, because I've lived it. And I get, child shows up in the passenger seat, how was it, sweetie? Well, coach said this. And that's their perspective, coach says. coach says has incredible power. I think it's because, and I know this was true with me, as players, as athletes, we're trying to be part of something bigger than ourselves. The world tells us it's about you, it's about you, it's about you. How do you look? What do you do? What do you achieve? But instinctively, we want to be part of something bigger. We want to be part of a tribe. Well, the coach determines your ranking in that tribe. The coach determines where you fit into that tribe. The coach determines where you feel comfortable in that tribe. Because the team, the tribe, can say, you're no good, you're this, you're that, you're lazy. And the coach will say, no, you're a grinder. You have great grit. We value you. You're part of this. And that trumps whatever the negative influencers are saying. Social media might say, you're a one-star, you're this, you're not that good, you're not pretty enough, you're not big enough. And coach can say, no, we need you so bad as the gunner. We need you so bad in the drills for practice. Your leadership brings value to this team. So coach says, those words that a coach has trumps all these other inputs that are coming in these young people's lives. And I hear this all the time when it comes to like positive coaching, positive teaching. Well, you lose discipline. You lose your edge. You lose your authority. I'd put that in a big bucket of lies too, because you know what you gain? You gain respect. You gain the ability to connect with a young person and shape the rest of their life. Because the majority of them are just going to be part of a tribe for a little while. But they're going to take those lessons they learned in that tribe, and it's going to determine how they parent. It's going to determine how they move forward in life. And if they become a lawyer or a CEO or work at Walgreens or whatever it is, it's going to determine how they interact with the people around them. It's going to determine how they handle adversity within their marriage. It's going to have a massive impact. Your words on that player is going to have a massive impact for the rest of their life. And then those people are going to become influencers, and they're going to take your words and how you taught them, and they're going to impact those people in their lives. And you see how it builds on each other? Do you see why Billy Graham said the two most important words in America today are coach says? Because it builds and it grows. I came up with my own personal coaching philosophy, and I'm not a traditional coach. I speak at clinics and camps and conventions all over the country to people that have way more pelts on the wall than me when it comes to coaching. I have chosen not to do it because I feel like I can have more impact in the world I'm in now. But I too have come up with a coaching philosophy. I call it, you're awesome, but. You're awesome, ... but. When you start with affirmation as a coach, as an influencer, when the first thing out of your mouth is affirming what a young person has done, and sometimes that's hard. Sometimes it's hard to find anything they've done that's good. But when you take the time to find it, their heart and their ears and their mind now opens up, which allows you the but. Hey, Trent. Your effort this week in practice was awesome. You brought it every day. But for some reason, we're not seeing it transfer over to the game. Hey, Trent, I love the fact that on that three-step drop, you're on balance, everything was good, you look perfect. But we got to do a better job not predetermining the coverage so you don't throw it to the other team and they run into the end zone. Hey, Johnny White Sox. I'm so proud of you, man. You get out there for pre-practice, you go through your functional movement, you're all locked in, you're doing everything we've asked you to do. But we gotta get you to lower your hips a little bit in contact. We gotta get you to finish. We gotta work on that. I'll tell you what, they heard the second part a lot easier because you started with the first part. It's amazing, too, is how many of you in this room have kids? I'm hoping good. Now this part of the speech works. How many of your kids are at some level an athlete or a performer or ambitious with their grades or whatnot? I figured. I think one of the biggest impacts my journey has helped me with is helping parents and myself through the parenting of an athlete. Because the same principle works in parenting, your awesome butt. But as parents, we go through four stages of parenting. We go through the caretaker phase, right? Where you're changing poopy diapers and you're freaking out when you can't hear them breathe for like 3 seconds in the crib, to when you're picking up crap on the floor, they throw off their high chair, right? You're caretaking. Then you transition into what I call cop. Then you're a cop. You're a full-time policing their activity. Well, then the chunk of your parenting is life coaching. It's coach, but not the coach that we're all sitting in this room for. It's the life coaching that is constant teaching opportunities to try to get your kid to better understand how to do life well. And then when you're old and crusty like me, then you move into the consultant phase. And that's kind of when they go to college. They really don't want you to coach them anymore, but sure, they want you on standby when they have a problem to consult them. My journey was interesting. We had four kids, actually. We lost our son when he was 5 and a half. He was our second. But the girls, as they've grown up, Maddie's now 21. She's my oldest. She plays beach volleyball at Pepperdine. She was a high school American volleyball player, went to Notre Dame out of high school. Didn't have a great indoor experience, body kind of broke down, has now transferred to the beach. She's on the number 2 ranked sand volleyball team in the country. My middle daughter, Tori, is a setter for TCU. And then my youngest, Delaney, who's 15, as we speak, actually, I should probably check my phone, I might have a text. As we speak, is playing at a national qualifier in Dallas with the 18s team, because she's that kind of good. I like to brag on my kids, but with all that comes a massive challenge as a coach parent. And that challenge is this, that we always have our coaching instincts going. If you're in a chair here, you are a coach. Your instincts are to coach. And just by the coaching, but just by the parenting journey, you are going to be coaching from like 7th grade to your senior year, life coaching. Here's the problem. Your kid doesn't want you sport coaching from 7th grade to their senior year. And you're like, no, that blows my mind because I'm so much better than the coach that they have, or I have so much to offer as a sports coach that could help my kid in guitar, help my kid in volleyball, or help my kid in softball, or help my kid in football, or dance, or cheerleading, whatever it is. Like, I can fix them. They can sit in the chair when I pick them up, and I can get, God, I can fix you. I have the answers for you. Here's the problem. They don't want it. You know what they want? Hey, sweetie, you look so pretty. God, I love picking you up from school. You need help on your homework tonight? Now, they've just come out of the gym. They have boogers in their nose. Their hair is disheveled. They've just ran wind sprints then to practice. And you're thinking, oh, I can dive in. I can help them get tougher, develop more grip, grit, have perspective. What'd you work? Like, your instincts are, what'd you work on today? Did you get better? How are your feet? Did you play with better leverage? Were you tougher? Instead, boy or girl, they just want you to have a parent. So I came up with this great tool, fell into it with Maddie. So as a bald guy, you always have to have a hat. I have a hat with me all the time. Strapped to my backpack, on the dash of my car, right? Can't get this beautiful dome burnt. So one day, Maddie gets in the car, and she just had a tough practice. And I can tell she was hurting. I could tell she needed the ball coach to come out. But I was also wise enough to not volunteer the information. Because Maddie was really like, she would listen to me when she asked for it, but if she wasn't asking for it, she just wanted me to be dad. So I look up on my dash and I see this hat. and I go, hey, Maddie, I got a game, let's play. I said, we have a really good relationship about me not jumping into what's going on with volleyball when you get in the car, but I've sensed there's times where I want to say something, but I don't want to shove it down your throat. Or there's times you want something from me, but you don't know how to get it from me. She goes, that's true. I said, what if I ask permission to put on the coaching hat? And as soon as the hat goes on, I'm no longer dad. That I can coach you. And that might mean some hard stuff. I might have to be a truth teller sometimes. She goes, well, can I ask you to put on the coach hat when I need you to coach me up? And I said, yeah. She goes, deal. And it's been amazing watching my kids grow up in the sports world. And how often they will ask me to put on the coach hat. Or when I feel them hurting or something's going on or they're in a dysfunctional situation, to be able to ask their permission to put on the coach hat and really dig deep into their soul on how I can help them. See, think about as a coach how much time you spend game planning. How much time you spend the next X's and O's, building the next drill, how you're going to train your coaches, whatever. Think about the amount of time spent in that. What if you took the same amount of time and planned how you messaged your players? What if you spent the same amount of time and calculated the words you were going to use? What if you spent the same amount of time and developed a coach philosophy that allowed your words to positively impact young people, knowing that that was going to be paid forward for years to come? Think of the possibilities if you devoted as much energy into choosing your words and to having a message and making sure that your coach says has lifelong impact. I think you'll answer that question, or you'll decide that once you answer a question. I think this is the question that every coach needs to answer today. What I didn't tell you about what I'm doing these days is I study coaches. I started doing 2000. I started taking football coaches and I started studying them. I've moved to other sports. And I just relentlessly study coaches, good, bad, and different. And in football especially, here's what I've seen. I've seen a massive transition from the time my dad would wake up and put on those bike shorts, crew socks, throw that whistle around his neck with pride, and go out there and teach these high school offensive linemen to play with leverage and keep their feet moving and get their head in the right position and push that sled all over the place with his little stepson on the back. And every coach I knew growing up was this cut from the same cloth. They coached it because they were passionate about it. They were passionate about helping young people get better. Well, somewhere around 15-ish years ago, that passion started getting traded in for ambition. And now you have two schools. You have your passion coaches and your ambition coaches. And I think you need to ask yourself a very important question. What am I? Am I a passion coach or am I an ambition coach? Because if you are an ambition coach, good for you. Go make a bunch of money. Go win a bunch of games. Know that you're going to leave a shitload of shrapnel on the sidewalk. And that shrapnel are kids. And it's also going to determine how you talk. It's going to determine your coach says. Because if it's about you, those kids are going to know it's about you. And the words you're going to say are going to be said to make you look better. But if you're a passion coach, then you are going to choose your words carefully. Then you are going to care more about the future of those kids you're influencing than your future. I think it's a question every single football coach has to ask. Every coach has to ask themselves. I think the two biggest lies, I said I'd end with this, the two biggest lies in football today are this. Number one is that the goal is winning. The goal is not winning. The goal is to have a winning process. They have the same results. The road to it is very different. It's one of the greatest lies you'll get as a coach. We coach to win. No, you say that because it sounds cool. And you read it in a book. And the depth of your football knowledge is what you read in a book. Those are the people that say winning is everything. A winning process will equal winning, and it'll change the world while you're doing it. The second biggest lie is that the biggest risk and danger in football today is player safety. That is a lie. The greatest risk in football today is the mental and emotional safety of those people playing it. The physical risk is real. The physical danger is real. It pales in comparison to the emotional and psychological damage that coaches are doing in this country. It pales in comparison. Half the kids don't have enough athleticism to even get hurt playing football, but they all have vulnerable hearts and minds. And a coach's words are going to shape the emotional and mental health of that kid. I love that the game is getting safer. I love it. Unfortunately, the messaging is about their physical health. The messaging should be about their mental and emotional health. If you don't believe me, here's one part of my life that maybe I have that you don't. I'm now removed, and I'm now watching my ex-teammates, and I'm watching their kids have massive emotional and psychological issues. One of my best friends in football has tried to commit suicide a few times. He's practically dead. It's not CTE. It's what's happened to him in his journey and what was said to him and how his identity was wrapped up in those words that a coach said. Coach says the most powerful words in our country today. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Trent Dilfer's keynote is an example of some of the things you'll get at our national conference. Just some inspiring and incredible messages about what we do in our profession, some great tips on how to build your program, how to build your career, how to sustain your program over the decades. You're going to hear from great coaches from every single level, keynotes by Mike Tomlin of the Steelers, PJ Fleck of Minnesota, Jeremy Pruitt of Tennessee, a great lineup of FBS coaches talking X's and O's, and our high school speakers have accumulated over 100 state championships. Register at usafootball.com, NC19 podcast. Enter the code podcast99 to save. Check out everything we're doing over at our new Twitter account, at FBDEV Coach. We're doing some great things there with our play of the day, our learn from video and coaching points of the day. We have our popular Your Call, which gives you the chance to put your offense or defense into a situation which we've pulled from a big game. We have links to some great coaching articles, analysis articles, a chance to learn from what other people are doing around the country. Check that out again at FBDEV Coach on Twitter. And for some of the most cutting edge techniques right now in football, those being used at the highest levels by the elite, go to footballdevelopment.com. You can register to get 3 free videos from either our contact system, which is blocking and defeating blocks, or our advanced tackling system, and you get our shoulder tackle system for free. Go to footballdevelopment.com. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please head over to iTunes and take a minute to give a rate and review. It really helps the podcast, and we appreciate you listening.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com. Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.